The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Just did what Neil Magny does. He wore him out, kept the same pace the whole fight.
No one had it in the tank to push the third round to get the job done. It's nothing new. I can do this all day.
Neil Magny!
Welcome to UFC Unfiltered.
Please tell me that's on video. I've never been happier.
I'm made for a fucking podcast. That's dangerous! Listen to me, we're at it!
I didn't have a fucking shirt yet.
All right, let's start. Welcome to UFC Unfiltered. Matt is shirtless.
Yeah.
We're little technical issues, so we're getting started a couple minutes late.
I'm sorry.
That's okay, Matt. You're shirtless. It was all worth it.
But you know why I'm shirtless?
Yes.
Are we bringing in? We have Neil Magny.
Let's bring him right in because he's been waiting.
I'm going to get a shirt. My kids are bringing me an espresso. Jimmy, the world knows.
Yes.
I'm sorry, Neil.
Oh, no, it's all good. Got time.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry I'm late. And I'm sorry I'm shirtless. Neil, first of all, before we get into me being shirtless, congratulations, man.
Oh, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Neil, let me tell you something. Everybody likes a comeback from behind fight. They like that. It's exciting. It's like it's out of a movie. Holy shit, man, is that a nail biter? Your family and friends are probably looking at that clock with you raining down punches from Mal being like, oh, a nail biter.
Yeah, man. Like literally with the time that was left on the clock and the ref giving him every opportunity to survive, I'm sure everyone at home was doing like, dude, is he going to get it done? Like, he's kind of pretty close right now.
What do you think? I mean, Neil, you had such a great third, and Malat looked really, really good. He had a solid first two rounds, but it's almost like did you sense him getting tired? Because I felt that his inability to do anything, to try any escape, to even feign throwing some punches back to survive for 12 seconds, just showed that he was purely exhausted. Did you sense that at any point in the round or only at that moment?
I definitely felt in the second round that he was starting to slow down a lot. I mean, even with his leg kick attacks, I mean, in the first round, he came out very offensive throwing out leg kicks. I was able to check most of them. And then by the second round, his leg kicks were coming out just that much slower where I was able to avoid the leg kick altogether. So I can definitely tell you slowing down a bit in the second round going into the third. But at that point, I was just like, all right, you know what? I got 5 minutes to get it done. Let me go out there and find a way.
Do you, because you're a guy who's known, like, you can do what you do for as long as you have to. You're not someone anybody expects to get tired or to fade. There's certain fighters where you look at and you go, all right, I just want to drag this guy into deep waters if I have to. Because it's incredible how you just look the same in the third round with your energy as you did in the first.
Yeah, but the thing that makes it difficult now with these guys is like I'm so much easier to game plan for. So even for Mike Malat, for example, the guy had 12 fights. Most of those fights were ended in the first round, second round of this fight. So for when it came to game planning, I had 20 minutes of total footage to watch on Mike Malat's fights and figure out, like, what kind of fighter he is, what his tendencies are, what he named and had during the fight and that kind of thing. But me, on the reverse side, I have 9 hours of footage where these guys can break down film on me and figure out what my tendencies are, how I'm going to fight, what my attacks are going to be, and that kind of thing. I think it makes it easier for them to game plan for me as opposed to me game plan for them. And they do certain things to kind of shut down my offense. And I gotta say, Mike was doing a great job doing that in those first two rounds. Like, he wasn't being as aggressive as he was in prior fights. He was staying just on the outside, scoring just enough to kind of close by. When he got takedowns, he wasn't really trying to advance and look for a finish right away. He was more so just content with holding position, letting the clock ride out, as opposed to chasing a finish like I've seen him do in past fights. So it definitely changes the dynamic where, like, I know I can push for Ricardo, I know I can push the pace, but when these guys are being so tactful in the fights, it definitely changes the ball game by a lot.
Hey, you know what I love? It is what I love. I watched the fight again, all right, today. And when I watched it again, I love, knowing now I know the outcome, I love around 2.5 minutes into the third round, they're talking about Mike Malott's next opponent. They're talking about, they are writing Neil McNeil. How dare they, Jimmy? They know who the fuck this man is. But listen, they got a job to do. They see the way the fight is going and playing out. Ooh, man, did that? Nobody, I'm telling you, who saw that coming? And then it makes it even better. It makes it that much more exciting. And there's another thing I noticed. When you were on bottom, and I was doing some of this today with my guys, with guard retention, and you're using your legs as a barrier to create distance, manipulate the balance to keep you in the game, compared to just going for Ashi attacks and sweeps, leg lock attacks, leg sweeps. I think that's big, where in a sense, where when Mike was on bottom, he is very aggressive, where he's looking to sweep you, looking to attack. So instead of self-defense and defending himself, creating distance, with these leg attacks, you're pulling somebody on top of you. Now, if he would have got that and got on top, great. But he didn't get it. So now, not only is he tired, he's keeping his foot on the fucking gas, looking for these sweeps. So by the time you mounted him, dude, you saw after the fight done, I'm sure it was from the strikes as well, but he looked like the Neil Magny train just ran over his body. He was tired as could be.
He looked wiped.
That's the biggest thing, is he never stay in the fight and stay active. Like, even in the second round, like, he knew watching film on that he was real aggressive with his submission attacks. I knew if I put my head out of position just long enough, he wouldn't hesitate to jump on a guillotine and things like that. So even on when I caught myself being on bottom, whatever, it was more so like, still find ways to be offensive, still find ways to interrupt his offensive game where he couldn't just like freely attack submission and freely strike at his own will, so to speak. And even that in itself is tiring. And even that in itself makes a guy really have to work hard to figure out, like, man, I got this guy down finally, and I still can't find a way to advance my position in the fight, so to speak. So like all those things, I think accumulatively just kind of adds up to get the total outcome of the fight was at the end there.
Did you, because you raised a good point. There are so many hours of footage on you, and there's not as much footage to watch of him. But when you realize that he's only been out of the into the third round once, he had a draw, and it's all first round finishes predominantly. Does that tell you anything about, hey, this guy might go for a submission instead of just, like Matt said, keeping position and winning the fight? For him, he may think, I have to get the submission because I've been getting submissions, and more likely to make a mistake or do something that's going to gas himself because he's chasing a submission when he doesn't need to.
Yeah, I mean, like when I watched his film, I knew that he had a really good counter strike. He's not just got a counter strike well in the sense that like he'll go volume for volume. He counter strikes to the point that he's able to actually land heavy shots and get the guy down to the canvas, so to speak. He never capitalized on his submission right away. So watching film on him, I was actually a bit hesitant to kind of rush or close distance too quickly because I didn't want to compromise my position, compromise myself at all, where he could capitalize on my mistake, so to speak. So it kind of made me a bit hesitant on trying to be too aggressive early on into the fight. But by the third round, it's like, all right, cool, you're down two, you got to go now. It was a bit like just kind of throwing caution to the wind and like, making it more about me. It's like, this was like, all right, you're down two rounds to nothing, whether it's a submission loss, knockout loss, or a decision loss, it's a loss nonetheless. So you must go out there and try to do something more aggressive, try to do something more different to change the outcome of this fight. And I kind of just threw caution to win and win it just that towards the end there.
That's kind of freeing, isn't it? When you're like, all right, look, it's almost like, F it. All right, I lost two rounds. Either I'm losing. Either I go for it now, or whether it's a by the judges or by submission or knockout, that's a very freeing feeling because you could just let shit fly. You know what I mean?
For
what
do
you
have to lose? Yeah. You know? Yeah, you literally go out on your shield first thing. I mean, before, I'm like, oh, cool. I'm doing a good job checking the leg kick. This is good. I'm doing a good job shutting down the submission game. This is cool. But at the end, it's like, all right, all those things are great, but you're still losing the fight. Like, what are you doing to win the fight at this point? So, yeah, it was definitely cool to, like, watch the fight play out in its totality and see the things I did well and that kind of thing. But throughout the job done, I mean, that was definitely nice on the cake for me.
Do you think this is a case, too, of a fight IQ thing? Like, have you ever had a fight where you were pretty dominant for the first two rounds, and then you handled the third round the same way that Mike handled it with you, as opposed to maybe just doing what you had to do to keep the win? Have you ever done that before where you went for a submission where you might not have needed to, where your fight IQ wasn't as high as it is now?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think this fight was a lot where the fight IQ actually played out pretty well. Like, two specific fights I can remember. One was against Alex Garcia, where I had him hurt early in round one of that fight. And then, like, knowing how aggressive a fighter he was and how explosive he was, I kind of just kind of coasted the next two rounds. I didn't really, like, push for a finish. I didn't really push to, like, change the outcome of the fight. I just kind of, like, rode my bike, so to speak, and coasted to victory in that fight. But it ended up being a split decision win, which, in my mind, during that time, I didn't think the fight was that close. But a couple of judges thought it was that close. And him himself actually thought he did more to win that fight as well. So that fight came back in my mind and let me know, like, all right, cool. Don't be content with just coasting. There's an opportunity to fight or even finish the fight, go out there and get it done. And the other part was the Hector Lombard fight, where in my Hector Lombard fight, I was able to reverse position, get him on bottom, take his back, and pretty much end up punching this guy like almost 100 times before the ref stepped in to stop the fight. So fast forward to this fight, I'm in the same position. I'm down in the scorecards, and I'm in a position to actually chase the TKO, where I could wait until the rest of it put me off. I could hit as hard as I can and have two things happen. Either he eventually loses consciousness, or the ref's like, all right, that's enough. Let me go ahead and pull him off. Both of those two things are based off of past fight experiences and fight IQ that I have because of those two fights.
I'll ask both of you guys this too. What do you think, Mike, in the position he was in, like you said, halfway through the third, what would have been the wiser thing for him to do to not wind up in that position that he wound up in? What do you think he could have done to maybe, even though you were clearly winning the round, what could he have done to, you think, prevent himself from just being completely gassed like that and putting himself in such a vulnerable place or allowing you to put him there?
In my opinion, if I was in his position where I thought that I was up two rounds and I was like, all right, third round, I'm tired. A guy just got a big takedown and he's in my guard. I would have done whatever I could to maintain that closed guard and keep his posture down, like kind of controlling the back of my head, controlling an overhook maybe, where I'm not able to posture up and really throw strikes to be fight ending. Sure, I could throw some peppering shots and that kind of thing, but I would just kind of like kind of keep the posture down and keep my guard closed where he couldn't really advance to lay the shot there to be fight ending or allowed me to improve my position at all.
Hey, let me ask you, what do you feel about when people are like, oh, they throw around the word gatekeeper? It almost sounds disrespectful, but I don't know, man. It's also like, look, if you want to hang here, I don't know. Do you find it as disrespectful when they call you?
I mean, to a certain extent, yes, but other part is like, yeah, not really, no. It's one of those things like, sure, if there's someone who could be in the UFC's top 10 for the last 10 years, show me another person who's been able to do that. Like, and it's not like I've just been there staying in the top 10 fighting maybe once, maybe twice a year. I was fighting on average 3 to 4 times a year staying in the top 10 for the last 10 years. So if you find another person who's done that in the last 10 years, you would have said, like, all right, that dude's a gatekeeper. Cool, by all means, go ahead and do so. But as far as I'm concerned, like, I know what I want to accomplish in this sport. I still know I have some time to get those things accomplished. So it's more so motivating for me where it's like, if I'm getting written off as being a gatekeeper, I'm getting written off as being a guy that's like kind of says who's able to join the rankings, that kind of thing. It's up to me to go out there and change that narrative at this point. Like, I need to do something different to change the narrative from being a gatekeeper to being a contender. If not, I just been instead of being a gatekeeper, so to speak. And in hindsight, 5 years from now, I'm retired, just long and done behind me, whatever. To say that I've spent as much time as I did in the top 10 of all the guys that I thought fought, like, cool, I'll be content with that. But like, currently where I'm at in my career, what I think I can get done in the next few years, for me, it's motivating more than anything.
Yeah, the idea of being a gatekeeper, I think the term nobody likes, but it is a statement about like, this is a fighter who you're going to get a lot of fights with these younger guys, these hot, like, bigger name guys who are on their way up. that a lot of other guys might not get, because the vision is they have to get through a guy like you before they're ready. So even though you might not like the term, it is a sign of respect. Like this, if they can get past him, then they're actually much more legit.
Oh, for sure. I mean, and it also finds value in the company, in the sport as well. I mean, I think being called a useless fighter in the company's roster would be a far worse term than a gatekeeper. I mean, whether it's gatekeeper or whatever you want to call it, like at least you fight, there's value for you in the company, in the sport, so to speak. Being some useless ass dude on the roster, I think that'd be a lot worse.
Another thing nice about beating these young guys' asses is they're going to get better. And when they get better and they start just dominating more people, you always got that feather in your cap if you want to revisit it. Hey, you want another shot? Mike, Malat, now that you got the belt, let's go. I don't know. I'm just saying. The guy's on his way. He's stopping everybody till he runs into Neil Magny. And it's like, you got that feather in your cap now. You got that over.
I mean, it does feel good if you have to get it done. I mean, especially when you start questioning yourself as well. Like, damn, do I still have it? Like, can I compete against these young up-and-coming guys? Like, maybe so. But, like, go out there and actually show you can. Like, all right, cool. I still got it. Let's go. There's still some more to fight me.
I mean, look, it's a different set of circumstances. But you look at O'Malley and Marlon Vera. I want to say Vera was, am I stupid to think that he was sixth? I don't know what he was ranked, but he wasn't like, you know, the top two. But because there is that history with those guys, because he's that one loss, he gets a shot at the belt. So fighting these guys like this, two or three fights, they get a belt. You may be the one rematch interest that they have because you're the guy that beats them. So that there really is a lot of value in beating these guys too.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen crazier things happen. I mean, Jorge Masvidal is a perfect example. I mean, a guy fought on a week's notice, against Usman, and not only did he lose that fight pretty decisively, he got a rematch on top of that. It wasn't like he had to go out there and beat a top five guy, top two guy, whatever. He's just like, all right, cool. There's enough value in this fight where I see a reason to go out here and make it where he can fight for a title again. You watch guys like Bobby Green up until his last fight, he kind of had a career resurrection, so to speak, where he was the guy like, oh, wow, I just beat a top 10 young up-and-coming fighter who was, again, undefeated in UFC. I just went out there and knocked him out. And now, you know, I'm sitting here playing this next contender to see if I get a shot at title, so to speak. So to see the guys like Jorge Masvidal and Bobby Green pull things off later on in their career just definitely gives me hope to see what I can do next couple years for myself.
Yeah, he's got a nice fight with Jim Miller at 300 too, which is a great fight that everybody wants to see. But you're right, with fighters with health and nutrition and all these things keeping guys fighting so much longer than they did years ago, you could absolutely have years of fighting left and have a whole second half, so to speak.
For sure. Yeah, I mean, Glover to share, another guy. I mean, right? Won his title at 42 years old. Most people never thought that was going to happen. And he for sure got it. I hope I don't take it to 42, but yeah. I know it's a possibility if I need to.
Hey, Neil, what's your thoughts on the whole cold plunge? Do you like that thing?
I have one in my backyard. My 3-year-old son has used it more times than I have.
You don't use it?
It definitely has its purpose. I mean, like I'm not a guy that likes to do like the full submersion where it's like your whole head and body's underwater kind of thing, but I definitely notice a difference in inflammation when I stick my lower body into it. So if I sit into it waist deep, whatever, I feel like my legs are like rejuvenated overnight, so to speak. I go to sit that thing for 10, 15 minutes nightly, and I feel like the next day I go right back to training, running, sprinting, and I feel great doing it.
10 or 15 minutes? Jesus, I've heard like 2 minutes, 3 minutes. You're doing up to 10 minutes in that thing?
His legs.
Yeah, but like I'm not fully submerged with like my whole body.
Just
like,
legs. Oh, okay, okay. Yeah. All right.
I love sitting in there. Yeah, and it really helps. Like, I have a lot of information over the years from just doing this the last 20 years, almost, whatever. So, and sitting in the cold tub for that long definitely helps that information. I feel like it definitely, like, jumpstarts my body, so to speak. So, I'm not a fan of, like, the full submersion for 2-3 minutes, but I definitely see it has a purpose where you can stick, like, your lower body in there or your arm in there, to, like, elbow deep for information or fatigue or soreness or whatever. I definitely see it has value.
I'm going to look into that, Jimmy. Because yeah. I do good steam every morning. I know George St. Pierre has like a barrel type one. I could fit that in my dressing room.
He just gets into it, right?
Yeah, he jumps in the barrel. I'm thinking about doing that. My little stock.
Yeah, I mean, I personally like it. I think it's worth it. I mean, like I said, like I can literally feel like come Monday, like my joints are pretty loose and mobile by Wednesday, Thursday. I'm like, man, I can barely touch my heel, my butt. My knees are so inflamed or whatever. I jump in that thing, sit in for a little bit, and I'm good to go the next day.
Had you ever tried cryotherapy? I'm wondering if it was the same thing as cryo, or is it better?
I mean, similar results. The only hard thing with cryo is that you have to go somewhere to get it done. And for me, like, by the time I, like, pack up the car, pack up the kids, go do recovery, I'm like, I'm good. I can just do it. Where now I can, like, put the kids to bed, go out in the backyard, hop in the cold plunge, and I'm good to go. It just makes recovery that much more easier, as opposed to, like, having to work it into my schedule where I have to, like, leave the house and go stuff to get done.
And you're in you're cutting out just a little bit, Neil. Oh, there he is.
There
we go. So your cold plunge, I mean, you're in Denver, so your cold plunge outside is a pretty horrendous experience. About 8 months a year, that's a rough go.
No, so I have one that's there's a company called Revive that does it. So the particular cold tub that I have, it goes from 36 degrees all the way up to 104 degrees. So you set the temperature wherever you want it to be, and because the water is circulating, it keeps it from freezing. So if I have it set at 42 degrees, it'll stay 42 degrees pretty much year round. There's a chiller on there, there's a heater on there that kind of like filters the water and processes the water, like this literally 24/7, just continues to move the water so it never freezes.
Oh, so you don't have to go out there with an axe like some guys do and chop up the water and get it with frozen cubes.
There's no hammers to the ice and that crazy stuff to get in. Wait, there.
What brand is it?
Revive Cold Plunge.
Thank you. I don't know why I'm looking. I'm not going to get one, but that sounds really interesting, so I'm going to look that up.
I like it. Right.
Yeah, I mean, I saw Corey Anderson using it every day, and I was like, I might look into this thing. And he swore by it. He was like, yeah, dude, this thing is amazing. And he's using that thing 2-3 times a day, every single day.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, all right, if it's working for him, it may work for me kind of thing. And I was like, I'll give it a shot.
I'm going to look into it, man. Dana's trying to get me into it. I did a little bit over the weekend. 32 degrees is too cold.
Yeah, I like a nice 75, 80.
Well, that defeats its own purpose.
It's just one of those things. I mean, if longevity is my career and feeling better means I got to send some cold water and not worry about doing any kind of crazy surgeries or procedures, I'm like, cool, I'm going to send some cold water and see what happens. Like, it's just a very minimal thing to do to try to get a big result out of it.
I believe that.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think 3 minutes is pretty standard, right? For guys, when they go in up to the neck, the whole full body submersion, I think about 3 minutes is what guys will do with that.
That's what I heard.
Yeah.
All right, Neil. Well, look, thank you for being patient with us today. And really, congratulations. Such an awesome win. We were really, really happy for you. And I love watching a veteran pull something out against somebody who just doesn't have the experience. I mean, Mike Bellot's a really good fighter. But just the fact that you've seen everything in the cage, I just love seeing stuff like that. So congratulations, man. It was really, really an awesome win for you.
And Neil, just so you know, he started the last episode, the first one since the fights. He goes, who am I doing this for? And he's clapping. I knew who he's doing it for.
Yeah.
He was doing it for you, and it was well-deserved applause. Yep. Neil, congrats, man. We're always rooting for you, dude.
I appreciate it. Thank you guys so much, man. It was a pleasure talking to you guys.
All right. Talk to you again. Thanks, Neil.
All right. No problem. Have a good one.
Swing into Seaside Golf in Ocean City, Maryland. Play like a pro at 17 championship courses designed by golf legends like Jack Nicklaus and Arthur Hills. Tee off on sweeping vistas at Eagle's Landing. Savor the coastal views of Lighthouse Sound. Or see why Ocean City Golf Club is considered one of the Mid-Atlantic's finest fairways. Whether you're sneaking in a quick round on a family vacation or going all in on a golf getaway, fun is always in play at Ocean City, Maryland. Plan your trip at OCOcean.com.
Emmy Award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of 6 live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
You know, Matt, it's funny. I'm looking at these Renew or Revive, whatever they're called. I'm going to look them up. It's funny. I don't have enough room on my terrace, and I think my wife would just kick me in the balls if I got one, so I'm not going to. What's that?
Read that.
Wetam.
It says Matthew.
Oh, it's backwards.
And it's a bunny on it. My grandmother made this.
Oh, that's nice.
When I was little baby.
Do you know what's funny?
Yes.
I did not even realize that you were Matthew. It took me a second. I was like, Matthew? I forget that Matt is short for Matthew. Oh, you've had that since you were a kid. All right, that's nice. Why would you still be very careful, Matt? You don't want to drop it.
And it's from Marie 77. So in 1977,
oh,
my grandmother, Marie, we used to call her Mamma Mia. Mamma Mia. Here we go again. My. But we didn't sing that guy, but we did call her Mamma Mia.
But wouldn't you keep that like in someplace where it won't get, I have cups, like just little ones from like Colin's show. And like, you don't want to, oh, when I laugh.
Why didn't you like the other day when I said, sometimes I become a chatty Maddie and you went like this. Don't leave. Is it cringy when I say that?
No, I think you should say it more, actually.
You know, now you know how I feel like with your fucking Chip, the fucking asshole.
I haven't done Chip in a while.
That's how I feel, except that's not a character. I'm being me, and you're hurting my feelings.
My wife hates Chip a lot. It makes me so happy how much she hates Chip.
This is what you should do with Nikki. Bring out Chip in bed.
I've done that before. I remember one year
I get violent.
As I had a bad set at a festival, and the girl I was dating blew Chip, which was very funny. But she was the only time she ever did anything with Chip. No woman I've ever dated likes Chip, and it's understandable.
I don't.
What were you going to say?
I wonder what it's like when Chip like orgasms, but it's probably disturbing. Being
fucking sexy.
And what happened to your friend Doug Bell?
I stopped doing all of them because I just get tired of it. I get very bored with things and I just stop doing them.
You're an artist.
No, I just short attention span. And like what I'm doing now with my wife, this whole fucking YouTube thing. But I've wanted to do that for years. Like, this is not something I'm just doing. Like, I replaced Chip with it. I've been thinking about doing stuff like this with her since 2018. So I'm glad we're doing it.
I like that she's natural on the camera.
Yeah. I mean, you've been around us. That's how we really are. We're not putting it on. No. No. We just bicker like old people, but it's a legit, and she's my best friend after you. So it's fun. And by the way, tonight I'm going to be at the Fat Black Pussycat. If anybody wants to come see me live, I've been forgetting to plug it. It's been selling out every week. 7 p.m. here in the Village.
Yo, I taught this morning a little guard retention. You know, guys are trying to get past you. I told you to do this the other day with Jedi Mike J. Use your legs to keep them. You know, listen, people don't want people getting past those legs in class because, hey, sure. My guard, that's 3 points. It's a better position. There's a lot more at stake in a real fight. Your legs, when you're on your back, is that an air over you? That's your first line of defense. They got to get past those legs to do some damage to you. You know what I mean?
Well, he was teaching me today how to get out of side control, bringing the legs in and using them as a barrier and either swooping the left leg around, pushing back and getting guard back, or on how to pin the elbow and then how to lift them on my shins and reverse them.
That's scissor sweep. And when you do that, you go, so you, when you get to the guard, that, and when you do, you look at him, you go, swoop, there it is.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Or either that or I'll whisper in his ear, my guard.
Don't do that, Jimmy.
My guard.
They go, yeah. What about it? Fucking
little people. Yeah. All right. Let's.
How do you like my guard?
Yeah, my guard. Ooh, I just whisper so no one else can hear it right in his ear.
We're going to kick you out of there. All right.
Hey, Paul Smith. Let's bring in Paul Smith. He's a comedian from Birmingham.
How is the comedy scene overseas?
I've only done it once. I did London, I think, for 2 days, Manchester once. It was phenomenal. I really enjoyed it, and I want to get back. It's been years since I've been there. I really want to start doing more. I'm 55. What am I waiting for? Hey, Paul, how you doing?
Hey, how are you? Can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir. Can you hear us?
Yes, I can hear you, yeah.
How are you, Paul? Paul, you're a stand-up comedian.
I am.
How huge is the stand-up comedy by you? How is it over there with the stand-up comedy?
It's pretty big. I don't know if we do the same numbers as over in the States, but I sell a few arenas out to do okay.
Yeah, then you're doing well. If you sell a few arenas, that's really good. I mean, one arena is good. A few arenas is fucking great. Have you come to, I worked London once for a couple of days and once in Manchester. Have you come to the States to work?
No, I've never been to the States to work. I wasn't sure if people would get my accent, to be honest, but I've recently that I went to Orlando in December. And I had a few Americans approach me, recognize me from the internet. So it might be something to look at next year.
You think the comedy night might not cross over the pond here to us?
No, I think I have quite an a strong accent. But I mean, a lot of Americans are watching it now, but I think I always put subtitles on the clips. So I notice when Americans watch me in real life and the subtitles aren't there, they get a little bit confused.
They might get a little lost, yeah.
Yeah. Let me ask you, Paul. You know, I ask guys like Jimmy and some other comedians about when they're coming up, like who do they look up to, whether it's Richard Pryor or some of these old school comedians. Now, what about you? Was it just... like, it's not just fucking Monty Python or some shit. What is it? It's fucking off with his left.
When I was growing up, there's a really old school comedian from the UK called Dave Allen. He's Irish, actually. And he used to, before anybody else I saw do it, he wasn't doing jokes. He was really sitting and telling stories. He used to sit with a glass of whiskey. And he was really big. He used to have a Saturday night TV show and he'd sit and he'd tell stories. If you ever get a chance, Google Dave Allen teaches a kid to tell the time. It's one of the best bits of stand-up I've ever seen in my life.
Dave Allen teach
a kid to tell the time. It's one of the finest bits of stand-up I've ever seen.
You know who I love? British Tommy Cooper. I go on Tommy Cooper fucking deep dives and I watch him like do funny speech. Like when Prince Philip, whenever he was getting an award or whatever, Tommy Cooper would be there. And what a pressure gig. Like you can't do anything dirty. You can't curse. You can't insult anybody.
There was a lot of that. Like there's a very famous comedian from Liverpool called Ken Dodd. Huge, huge icon over here. Never swore once. Used to do 4-hour shows and not swear.
What was his name?
I don't know how. Ken Dodd. I got asked to open a memorial theater to him, but I declined because I don't think his wife would appreciate my style of stand.
It's funny too. They offered me many years ago. Luther Vandross. I had the same accountant at him. It was such a bizarre connection. And he was doing Radio City Music Hall show. So my accountant's like, hey, they're looking for an opener. I'll recommend. I'm like, I'm the wrong guy. I'm dirty. I can't work family clean. And you don't want to, ruin a night for all those people.
No, that's the worst thing, isn't it? When you know you're going to die and not only are you going to die, but you're going to really upset a few people.
Yeah.
And I don't think I'm as dirty as you. But
No, I'm definitely very salty, but it's like, I would have been dishonest to take the gig and pretend like, no, it would have been like a shitty thing to do.
Yeah.
Paul, when did you realize you were a funny man? Were you just a silly kid and then You found
no,
out you
I don't. I mean, people get really disappointed with me because I don't think I'm particularly funny in real life. I'm quite a quiet guy. I tried it in my early 20s. I think I was going through a whole like self-development thing, and I thought if I do that once, it's like the bungee jumping of confidence, isn't it? So I thought I'd do it once, and I never intended it to be. But something happens to me when I get on stage. I get really, I'm more comfortable there than anywhere else, really. Much like I've spoken to a lot of fighters, I know a lot of fighters now, and I think a lot of fighters feel the same way when they get in the cage. It's like you're more comfortable there, even though it's the place most people would be terrified of being. You find yourself more comfortable there than just in your real life dealing with normal problems.
I'm most comfortable on stage when I'm doing what I want to do, but there are so many, like there's nights where I suck or my energy is off, and there's no place that I'm more uncomfortable than when that's happening, when I'm like, I know that it's me. They're not a bad crowd. You just can't get them. I'm like, none of the things that I would normally do to get a crowd are working. And I'm like, I just suck right now. And they're all looking at me like I'm a fraud. It's really uncomfortable. But you plow ahead and you make their life miserable. Yeah. It's kind of satisfying. Hey, you take MMA. I know you love MMA. Do you go to fights there? Have you been to any fights?
Yeah, I've been to a few. I go to Cage Warriors. I've been to FCC, which is on UFC Fight Pass. Obviously, been to Octagon. And I've been to a few of the UFC events here.
Are you, sorry, your tour is called Pablo. Is that a Kanye reference at all?
No, it's a Pablo Escobar reference. Oh,
even better Pablo. Why Pablo Escobar? Is there a bit of, you do about him? How's it tie
just,
in?
No, it just became, I did a fight last year I donated the money to charity. I had to pick a fight name, so I picked Pablo Escobar, which is kind of, there's a noise that a lot of British fighters, go around British gyms, the noise people make when they throw punches, has. So I call myself Pablo Escobar. It was just a play on word.
How did you do?
I lost TKO 76 seconds.
Oh, all right.
It was full pro rules MMA. It was good. It was a great experience, to be honest. It was a really, really good experience. And it was in an arena. It was a big show.
Who'd you fight?
I fought a guy called Jake Quickenden. A lot younger than, faster than, bigger. He did really well, to be fair. He caught me with a good 1-2 straight away, and I tried to grapple him. I focused on my grappling a lot. It's something I've really grown to love, to be honest. And I tried to get hold of him, but it just wasn't my night. So yeah.
Is he a comedian? Who is he?
No, he's an actor, singer.
All right.
He's an ex-professional athlete. I don't know if I'd have known, if I'd have looked at him before the fight, I don't think I'd have taken
him. That's funny.
But had you ever been like, it's weird. Were you like a fighter growing up as a kid, or was that like rare for you to get punched like that? And
I don't think I've ever been punched like that, to be honest.
How did it, what was it? Was it worse than you thought it would be? The same as you thought it would be?
No. It was weird because it doesn't hurt. You would imagine it would, but it the best way I can describe it, I'm trying to be described it to people, is it's like being in it, hit in the face with a space hopper. It's like kind of that impact, but you don't really feel, it's not sharp like knuckles, especially those little gloves.
Yeah.
So he caught me with a 1-2, and it kind of just, it made the whole world went away, and I was like, okay, just stay composed. And I landed a few good leg kicks, but I just remember thinking he was so long and range. I was like, I don't know. I was like, he's so far away. I remember my coach screaming, just throw your right hand. And in my head, I was like, he's on the other side of the cage. I can't hit him.
Tell me about it, Paul. I'm 5'6".
I was about to say, Matt must know this problem.
Oh, I had that problem. That's when you got to come in with a double, triple jab, coming behind that.
Yeah.
Overhand going. But Paul, does it make you look at the fights a little differently or respect it a little bit more when there's...
Absolutely. Do you know what? They asked me to do another fight, and I mean, I'm 41 and it's probably not the best age to get punched in the face again, but I would fight again. The most difficult thing, I trained for a year, and the weight cut, man. Like, I cut from 94 kilo to 77, which is about, I don't even know what it is in pounds, but it's about, what, 205, 210 to 170, I think. And it was unbelievably difficult to do, especially that last week where you're waterloading and you're using the sauna blanket, you're in the bath. your eyeballs are sticking to your face. I've never been. I was sat in a sauna and I was licking the sweat off my own lips, and it was the most delicious thing I'd tasted in a long time, because it was just a little bit of salt, because I had no salt.
Or it when you're sucking that weight and then you go into like a cold, even though you can't have water yet, you go into a cold shower, like cold.
Yeah. I got an ice bath and it was like heaven. Yeah. And you go past wanting food. I didn't even want food at the end of it. When I got to the weigh-in, I just wanted water. I've never felt anything like it in my life. It was unbelievable. And I've got so much respect for all the fighters who do that, especially those fighters. Some fighters turn up, haven't done that, and then the fight gets called off and they have to then go and do it again. And it's like, it's mad. Like, the dedication these guys have got is insane. And then to do all the training as well on top of that. But like, I just love being around it. I love being in the gyms. The energy those places have. Like, I train at Tom Blackledger's gym. He's like a real pioneer of UK MMA. Fought in the UFC early on, and he's just a great guy. Everyone, it's just the loveliest places to go.
Yeah, it's interesting. Oh, sorry. I train minimally, and the thing that was my cardio has always sucked for anything I've ever done. But when they always talked about how takedowns are the most exhausting thing, you don't know it until you try it. And then I'm like, I'm just attempting whether I got it or not. I'm like, this is fucking exhausting. Taking somebody down once. Yeah. I mean, I'm 55, so I'm old, but watching guys do that over and over, fail takedowns, you'd always hear Cormier saying, those are the most tiring things, but I finally got it when I tried doing it. They're horrible.
Yeah. I really wanted to do a short, like a funny video where, like, being an armchair fan where someone's just saying, just stand up. And you've got like Tom Aspinall or someone just pinning you down. I wish someone could feel how difficult that was. Not even Tom Aspinall, someone small. Like, I did some sessions. Like, I trained with Molly McCann, and I'll be honest, I was a lot heavier than I am now. And we did a sparring session, she was going light. And I looked at her, and I honestly remember thinking, well, I know she's a fighter, but she's a tiny woman as well. Go a bit easy. And as soon as we started sparring, I was like, I am in trouble. Yeah. I'm in so much trouble. And she just battered me for three rounds. The power these fighters have got, the power to weight ratio as well. It's mad. It's a different level of fitness and strength.
And I'd like to give a shout out to Molly McCann. She, she had a hard time. She got submitted. People started talking about a ground game. She concentrated on it. She took a jiu-jitsu match, and she won by submission. And she's looking, she's really upping her ground game. So she handled
it. And the girl she beat is no joke. The girl she beat changed her own lives. She's great, man.
That's awesome, man. I like to see I like to see somebody handle a loss like that.
Yeah. Molly's unreal. Molly's the best person to be around. She's such good energy.
I just found out we're having her on the show next week, next Wednesday.
Oh, awesome.
I'll tell her you said hi.
And how did you meet John Kavanaugh, or did you already know him?
No, do you know what's really weird, like, turn of events? Because I was looking for a gym, because I didn't want to miss training. I was on tour, and I was going over to Dublin. So I asked for some contacts, and I messaged one guy who, it turned out my opponent was over there at the same time training, so I couldn't go to him. And then weirdly, I noticed John Kavanaugh followed me on Instagram. So I thought, I'm just going to be cheeky. So I messaged him saying, hi, coach, thanks for the follow. And he said, I love your stuff. If you're ever over in Dublin. I said, weirdly, I am this week. And he said, okay, come down. And that is an amazing gym. Let me do a 2-hour session. And then he dragged me around the mat for about 10 minutes. I think he guillotined me about 17 times.
I like that Kavanaugh. Yeah. I like him a lot.
He's lovely.
He's a great trainer, and he's a good leader, you know? I like him.
And, Paul, let me plug you properly before you, because our show is ending, but I want to plug you, your Pablo tour. I've seen some of your clips on Instagram, and you do crowd work. You're very funny. It's one of those things where when someone does it well, it's really fun to watch. And you're doing it successfully in large rooms. So you have a great way of letting everybody know what's going on. That's not easy to do. You're talking and you're explaining things away. Everybody in the room knows exactly who you're talking to and what you're dealing with. When does your tour start, or did it start already?
No, it starts in May. So my last tour is just ending. And then the next tour starts in May. And then it's going right through till mid-2025 now as it stands. There's like 200 shows, but we're still adding some in. I think we're going to try and add some US dates, so hopefully we'll be over there, and some Australian dates as well. So, yeah, hopefully I'll get a chance to come over and see you, Jim.
Yeah, let me know if you're in New York. It'd be nice to meet in person. I'm usually here. And what's the website? The tour is called Pablo. I know you work out in this Liverpool comedy club. I don't remember the name of it, but they're all sold out, a lot of those. There might be one that still has available tickets.
Yeah, all my tickets go through there. So I always work with those guys. So it's hotwatercomedy.co.uk. All the tickets to my tour are available there. It's the best comedy club in the UK. So go down and watch. If you ever over at Jim, come down to our club. I think it's going to be, we're opening a new place soon and it's going to be the biggest in the world, I think, technically. So, come down. It's purpose-built comedy theater. Come down, awesome. Check it out. You're going to have a good time.
Yeah, I will, man. Thank you. I want to get back over there. And most of your shows are sold out. So anybody listening, there's a few with a couple tickets left, but I mean, these things sell very, very well. So congratulations, man. And we'll talk to you again. Look forward to meeting you in person.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. Thanks, Matt. Bye-bye.
All right, Paul. Nice
All to right, meet Paul. You. Take care. And Paul on Instagram. Paul is the Joker on Twitter and Instagram. X and Instagram. Yeah. All right, Thank buddy. You. Good talking Thanks, to you, sir.
Bye-bye. Take care, Paul.
You know,
Jimmy, another splendid show.
I think so. I mean, the real heroes. Sure, firemen do that. It's us.
Yeah. What? Jimmy, let me try. I got to crap in that box and bring it to him. I'm still yet to
Are you just walking around with it or did you mail it?
No, I didn't do it yet. I didn't actually poo in it. I have to. I just don't like little science projects with my ass. You know what I'm saying?
I understand. Just go squat over the box, make a duty.
Okay.
Now, last thing I want to say.
All
right. Stipe turned down fighting Aspinall because he only wants John Jones. I get that. But I mean, the advantage to fighting Aspinall. Is if you beat him, you're the champ.
He's been the champ. I think he's going for greatness. That's why
he is. No, I know, but there's no. You never know what's going to happen in 6 months with Jones. He's coming back from a very serious injury. So it's a risk. But anyway, I love Stipe, so I hope that fight happens. Thank you to Paul Smith and the great Neil Magny. And we have Molly McCann next week. I'm looking forward to seeing you again, Matt.
Yeah, man. I was going to say, how can you not like Neil Magny?
Love him.
Me too. All right, Jimmy. So much fun. Thanks, I almost cannot wait till next week.
Oh, I can. I'll see you then.
Bye, everybody.
Goodbye.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.